Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
I'm Richard Burns, I'm a Manchester City fan. You can find me on Twitter at Richard the Burns, and I write for Yahoo Sport UK.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan. You can get me on Twitter at @the_jersey_fits and write for EPL Index.
Hello, I'm Jay. I'm editor of TheEaglesBeat.com, a Palace fan site. I'm also presenter of a local community radio show called Back of the Net. You can mostly get me at TheEaglesBeat on Twitter, and also get me on @_backofthenet_ on Twitter for the radio show.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, of course, we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. Richard, not going to do a whole convoluted intro. You beat Manchester United at Old Trafford. What was your view of that one?
A very good view of it. It was superb. I have rarely felt so confident going into a derby, because I've been so impressed by how City have started the season and the way that they're playing. And I don't really think there's a blueprint at the moment for beating City, because with the way the fullbacks are moving into midfield and the sort of tactical innovations that Guardiola's implemented, I genuinely don't think a Premier League team has played quite like City are doing at the moment, like ever. It makes it really hard for teams to read us and to work out what we're going to do. In a strange way, and I think Mourinho hinted at it beforehand, Aguero being out threw another variable into that that made us even harder to work out, because there were so many options that we could have done. Guardiola has a history of playing without strikers. So that, I think, made it difficult for United to work out. And if there was one fear that I had, it was that of all the managers in the world who might be able to blunt City and wouldn't be too worried about sort of fouling a big game up, it would be Mourinho. But that didn't really come to pass. The first half was as good as I've seen City play in years. And I thought that a couple of weeks ago against West Ham, and the first half in the derby was another step above it to walk into a title rival's home ground. And you know, in a big showpiece occasion that was being overshadowed beforehand by, with the media talking about the rivalry between the managers and all their history, this was a really big game, and I thought City handled it brilliantly. United had a good first 5 minutes, and then once we controlled it, it was comfortable beyond belief. The only way United got back into the game, once City had taken a 2-0 lead and played some pretty breathtaking football that had literally silenced Old Trafford. Like, I couldn't believe how quiet it was apart from our end. The only way they got back into the game was through a mistake from Claudio Bravo in net. And once they had that, it gave them a bit of a foothold that they'd started to do something with in the first 15 minutes of the second half. And then City worked out what to do again, and the problem solved on the pitch. And that was partly through Guardiola's substitutions, and it was partly because the players seem to have the confidence and the freedom to work things out for themselves a little bit now, which hasn't been there the last 2 years. And so all this stuff is really refreshing, and knowing that they can do that was part of what inspired my confidence anyway, because we've seen it in, we've conceded a goal in the Sunderland game, the West Ham game, the Stoke game. We've always reacted positively to it. Kevin De Bruyne was unbelievable. It says something about his performance that he somehow outshone David Silva, who was sensational. Just a performance full of grace and poise, and it was just beautiful to watch. He's back to his best, if not better. He might somehow be hitting a new peak, which, given the standard that we're used to for him, is pretty ridiculous. And there were a lot of fears about him after last season, which was disappointing for him, but he was outstanding. Fernandinho is having the entire team built around him and he's absolutely relishing it. John Stones at centre-back is just purring his way through games. Otamendi looks like a different player. The only disappointment on the day was that Bravo didn't have a great debut, but he has, and that's, you know, putting it politely, but I was so happy with the way City played, and the only nerves came from the sort of natural tension of being a goal ahead in the last 5 minutes, because we never ever really looked threatened. United with their £85 million signing in midfield and Zlatan Ibrahimovic up front resorted to hoofing the ball, and City dealt with that all day. So my view of it was very, very positive. I find it remarkable just how quickly the team have adapted to what Pep's asking of them and the intensity and the demands that he requires. We've laid down a marker now. We've laid down a marker for the next 3 years of rivalry between Pep and Mourinho, and we've laid down a marker for just how good we can be this season. I'm not going to say anything stupid like we'll definitely win the league or we're going to do a clean sweep, but there is a lot of catching up to do in a very short space of time for the teams around us, I feel.
All right, now we're going to talk to Dan about Arsenal. Obviously, you get a 2-1 win, maybe not as easy as you would have liked. A weird own goal, a Koscielny bicycle kick. This game truly had it all. Late-minute penalty, Santiago Cazorla ends up taking it. So, very exciting, but what was your take on it?
Yeah, exciting is definitely a word for any last-minute winner. And that game was no doubt weird. But overall performance was not great. We really struggled to create a lot, and our defense was fine, really. A draw would have probably been a better result, a more fair result. Obviously not a better result, but a more fair result. I'm not going to argue with a win, obviously. But, what was it? Start the game off, we really didn't get a lot going. Southampton got a free kick in the middle of the pitch, about 20 yards out. Tadic hit it, great save by Cech, tipped it on the bar, but then it kind of came straight down off Cech's back and in for an own goal. That was annoying. And then, what was it? It would have been about 10, 11 minutes later. We get a corner. Would have been either Cazorla or Ozil puts it in, don't remember. Coughlin got his head to it, then Perez won the second header, and it just kind of floated up there, and Koscielny went and biked it. Shockingly enough, it was really, really no one could believe what had happened. It was just unreal. The center back, captain on his birthday with a bicycle kick. I'm not really sure that happens very often, if ever. But it was really just an awesome goal, and not one that anyone expected for obvious reasons. And then for the rest of the game, not a lot happened. Neither team created any real clear-cut chances. I want to say off the top of my head, the best one was Shane Long's chance, but even that was half a chance, and he's not very good, so he missed. Alexis had a decent chance. He put it over. Not a lot was happening. It looked like it was going to go to a draw, and then, what was it, in the 90th minute, things got weird, if they weren't already weird enough. But so what was it? Shane Long in his own MV. Southampton's attacking end in the corner. I don't know if he was actually fouled or not, but he was either a foul or a very ambitious dive. And Arsenal did not put the ball out of play for him, even though he was on the ground grabbing his ankle, which Arsenal usually do. But apparently they felt a sense of urgency, being the 90th minute and all. Went up the pitch. I can't remember if it was from a corner that Koscielny went down or just a cross, but Koscielny was down in about the edge of the 6-yard area. But they kept playing on. Mustafi chipped the ball into the box. Giroud went for it, got pulled down by Font, penalty. One of those that, if you're on the team that's called for, you're like, in the rules, it is a penalty. But then if you're on the team that's called against, like, yeah, they never, ever call shirt pulling as a penalty. So it was kind of weird, but I'm not going to argue with it. It was a penalty. It is in the rules. Cazorla stepped up after 2 minutes of treatment for Koscielny and the ref booking three different Southampton players for foul and then arguing. Cazorla stepped up, showed his balls being bigger than the rest of his body, scored, 2-1 win. Again, not a great performance, but oh well.
Yeah. I did want to talk a little bit more about your new signings. I think most people were surprised that Perez started, and some people were surprised that he and Mustafi started immediately after signing with the club. What was your take on their performances?
Perez didn't have the greatest debut. He was very, very isolated. Did not get into the game a lot. It'll be interesting to see him with Alexis because, quite frankly, the service into him was really poor, specifically Oxlade-Chamberlain. He got the ball a lot, and he didn't make a lot of passes. He gave the ball away a lot. He tries really hard, but he has not been good for a while now. Then Mustafi was fine. He was good. Didn't make any real mistakes. Distributed from the back fine. Was good. Just nothing really to say. That's fine for a center back. You don't really want, you know, some center backs go and score bicycle kicks, but that's not really a requirement of them.
All right, Jay, Crystal Palace get their first win. Christian Benteke, big signing, shows up, gets a goal, a nice little header. What were your thoughts on the Palace match?
Very happy. I said before we came on air that Twitter is a very happy place yesterday. It's not been great the last few weeks since the season started for Palace and Pardew and some of the signings that have come in, but it all clicked yesterday. It all clicked very well indeed, particularly after the bad news during the week that the new signing Loic Remy got injured in training, which just adds to our injury woes from last season. I mean, I mentioned it so many times last season on the podcast that our injury crisis was, I've never known anything like it. And we signed a player on loan from Chelsea for the season, Loic Remy, a player that we've been after for quite a while, I believe. First week in training, gets injured. And he's on his way, or he's back at Chelsea now to receive treatment. He's not been sent back from his loan deal. But it's believed to be out for about 6 to 8 weeks, which is truly fantastic from our perspective. So going into the game, a little bit of disappointment there because, you know, the striking options are something we were looking to bolster, and we had bolstered in the transfer window. But I was quite positive about the game. I had a good feeling about going to Borough, a newly promoted side. You know, they would look at this game to be one that they could win. Really, in comparison, you know, looking at our form going into it, Borough were probably just about edging it. And I think a lot of the bookies out there and a lot of the pundits were predicting a home win for this one. But we had a good, strong lineup. Our bench wasn't quite as strong as I'd like it to be, which was our biggest problem last season, I think. But, you know, we were missing Johan Cabaye, who returned home from France, or for international duty from France, and same as James McArthur, returned from international duty through being injured. So it's a familiar theme going on here. But thankfully, James McArthur made it to the starting lineup, and he is just a fantastic player for us. He does all the jobs that you all the dirty jobs in a team that you don't particularly see players do. He's a machine, runs from one end to the other. I can't say enough good things about the guy. It's great to have him back in our side. We missed him for 2 months last season during that terrible run we had at the start of at the turn of the year. And he really is a big part of our game. So Johan Cabaye was missing, I'll mention him, but we started well from the outset. We took the game to Borough, and a great bit of play from Wilf Zaha, who was actually on fire for this game. There's a big concern that after the interest from Tottenham in the transfer window that his head will be turned a little bit. He's a very, oh, Kev, you know, you said it yourself, he's a very sulky kind of player. He has to be, you know, in training, he never looks particularly happy. But when he's got a smile on his face, he's enjoying his football, then there's not many players that can kind of match him in terms of, you know, defensive. And George Friend, who's highly rated for Middlesbrough, had a torrid afternoon in front of him as fullback the whole afternoon. And Wilf sent in a fantastic ball across to Christian Benteke for him to get off the mark. Still has to do a lot with the header, actually. He had to get up above the defender, and he headed it well. And really looking forward to seeing much more of the same from Benteke. His whole game was very good, showed us a lot of what we're missing, a lot of energy up front, good on the ball for a big guy, protects the ball well. And that shows us that he can bring other players into play. There's one move later on in the game where he held the ball up so well, turned in the box and turned his back to goal effectively and laid the ball off to Townsend, who had a great effort on goal, turned away. So all in all, very positive from Palace. It's been coming, to be fair, because we played really well against Bournemouth without getting the win that we perhaps deserved. First half, we were terrible in that game. Second half, we were exceptional. And we've taken some of that into this game. And I did wonder that, you know, the very late equaliser we got in that Bournemouth game was more, we deserved a lot more than that from that game, but I felt that could be a bit of a turning point for us. And yeah, maybe that's proved to be the case because we did ride our luck in this game, and it could argue have been a penalty call for Scott down in the area later on in the game where the ball kind of came up off his thigh and hit his arm. There was a second penalty claim on Damien Delaney which was nothing really. It kind of hit him when he wasn't. It was kind of back to goal when it would have been very harsh to give that. So, yeah, we rode our luck. But I think you make your own luck in this game, really. You know, we took the game to Borough. They had chances. Steve Mandanda was... he's going to turn out to be a fantastic signing for us. Probably, I think I've said before, he's going to be the signing of the seasons for us. You know, Benteke's going to score the goals, no doubt. But we paid $30 million for him. We've paid him to come in and do that. But Mandanda, he's just absolute class. And I'm just glad that Pardew had the option to bring a Hennessy back in. I think Mandanda, unless he gets injured, then nobody else is going to get a look-in goal for us. Absolutely fantastic. And that's the kind of thing we need to do, build from the back. And, you know, he organises the back line. Even though he doesn't speak an awful lot of English at the moment, you know, we have a few French-speaking players in the side. He just gets out there and, you know, does his talking on the pitch. Fantastic. Good with both feet. And really good shot stopper as well. So he's that kind of key part of the, you know, defensive unit that we've kind of missed a little bit. A very vocal and positive goalkeeper. So all in all, very happy with the 3 points. And I'm really hoping that we can push on from here going into next weekend.
Yeah, I wish I had a more interesting football or tactics question for you, but I'm interested in hearing what the whole situation is surrounding the signing of Benteke's brother and then him being on the bench and celebrating the goal. How did all of that transpire?
Well, we believe that he was recommended by Christian Benteke himself. You know, I think Jonathan Benteke was playing in the Russian leagues last season but was without a club. And he's come along probably at the right time because we had a few injuries going into this game, particularly the striker options. And it's probably thankful that we did have him around the club. And he's come into the club signed. I'm not even sure what contract he signed. I think he signed a contract until January or maybe the end of the season. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's an intriguing one because the club didn't officially announce his signing. He just appeared on the bench on Saturday. There's a lot of rumours going around that he was joining the club with his brother, Christian, but nothing official came out at all. And then obviously the team sheet came out yesterday, or it was mentioned that he was travelling with the squad. So yeah, I don't have anything definitive on that, actually, to be fair. But yeah, it was such yesterday seeing him stand up and applauding his brother for scoring that goal and obviously replacing his brother later on in the game. Yet to see kind of what he could bring to the side. But when our squad is fully fit, if it's fully fit this season, I don't expect to see him on the bench that often. But he may prove that to be wrong. But I would mention the signing of Flamini during the week from Arsenal, which for me I think is a brilliant piece of business. You know, we were one player short when we named our Premier League squad. We named a squad of 24, so there's one place available. And it sounds like there was always a view to bring somebody in, like for me. It sounds like they were talking to Flamini's people for quite a while. So I think he could prove to be a very wise addition to the squad. And he came on with about 7 or 8 minutes left to go and did that job you want him to do, kind of, you know, defended in front of the back line and kind of helped us get over the line in that game yesterday.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, for Tottenham, it was a very interesting one. The first half, I thought we were pretty disappointing again, which was frustrating as we hadn't really seen a good performance out of Tottenham yet this season. While it is impressive that we already have 5 points this season, it has not been from playing some terrific football. I think probably the last 15 or 20 minutes against Everton is the best we've seen us thus far this season. So the first half looked a little more of the same. I wonder how much of that is the Dyer Wanyama pair. Not that they aren't doing their jobs, but just it's a very defensive setup. So anyway, it looked like it was going to be deadlocked for a while. But then Christian Eriksen put in a great ball from the right. Christian Eriksen, by the way, signed a new 5-year contract this week. And it immediately showed. I don't know if it was the money that was weighing on his mind or what, but he did have a good couple of games for the international team for Denmark. He comes back, looks to be in excellent form all of a sudden out of nowhere after having struggled the past 3 weeks and then obviously towards the end of last season. But I thought he did very well. But getting back to the first goal, Eriksen played in a ball to Son, who last season struggled a lot of times with his first touch. So what does he do this time? Let's just forego that whole first touch thing. Hits it first time and buried it. It was a very nice goal. Just opened up his body, slotted it past the keeper. And was very pleased with that. So 1-0 going into the half. Then in the second half, you know, things were progressing. Things were looking a little bit better. Wanyama picked up a yellow card. Then very soon after had a second challenge that could have been a yellow. So then Pochettino withdrew him around the 55th minute and put on Lamela. And then within 30 seconds of Eric Lamela being on the pitch, we scored a goal. And while he wasn't directly involved, he did make a run that kept, I wish I remembered the name, whoever number 20 was on Stoke, kept his eyes on Lamela's run, which gave Son just enough space to drive in and hit the ball first time that Eriksen played into him. So two goals, two Eriksen assists, both of them scored by Heung-min Son. And if Son can show up the way he did in this match, or even a percentage of it, like 60% of what he did in this match, if he can do that the rest of the season and be the player he was at Bayer Leverkusen, we could be in for a very good season if we have players like that that are willing and able to step up into that first team and really try to claim a spot for themselves. But anyway, so that was very nice, the second goal. Then we just went on a tear for the next 15 or 20 minutes, scored two more. Dele Alli and Harry Kane both got on the score sheet. Obviously, they did not have the summers that they had hoped for. With England, hadn't really gotten off to great starts, but they started looking good as well. I think Dele Alli as a player who is allowed to just roam around the pitch is something that Stoke have a very hard time dealing with, because it seems their defensive setup is so rigid that they don't know how to account for a player that can just be that free. And you'd think Gianelli Mbula, who I do rate, by the way, would be the player that would be tasked with sticking on him, but Mbula found himself forward a lot. And wasn't able to shut him down. And then if you put Mbula on just Alli when Eriksen is having a good game, maybe that opens up too many passing lanes. So maybe that wouldn't go, but they should have done something. Because as soon as they were 2-0 down, they had to open up, and then that just let us run roughshod through them. Taking Wanyama off for Dier, by the way, I think is possibly the last time we're going to see that duo this year. Dembele is now back from his suspension. Moussa Sissoko has now worked with the side. He did come on late. Wasn't amazing, wasn't awful. He did have two good crosses. Well, he had two crosses. One of them was good. The other one went straight to the keeper. But I thought the most impressive thing he did was he made a pitch length run to try to go and stop Arnautovic, who had very little standing in the way of him and Hugo Lloris's net. So was very impressed with that. Was joking with Jake Jackman, who used to be on the show all the time, host of the Championship Roundtable, random plug, that run might have been more than Sissoko did for Newcastle all of last season. Still waiting to see how he beds in, although he did get a very warm reception from the fans, which I thought was interesting. I was really curious to see how the fans would react to his presence, and it did seem positive on the whole, so that was good. Jansen comes on late, was really hoping he'd be able to get a goal. This is the perfect game to bring a player like Jansen, who's been playing well, just needs to bulge the back of the net to get the confidence up. But then as soon as we brought Jansen on, we took Eriksen off. And so then we started playing more reserved, which I guess is understandable when you're up 4-0. Just would have liked to keep the foot on the gas a little bit longer if possible. But all in all, very pleased with the result. I think it was easily the best half we've played this season. Even if we hadn't scored the goals, we were just running roughshod through them. And yeah, now with Dembele back, we should be feeling very good. The fact that we went 4 unbeaten without Moussa Dembele in the team, considering all the negative stats that existed last season without Dembele, I think it's great for us. I think it's a good sign of where the club is heading. And as I mentioned, the development of Lamela and Son could mean that we're in the top four race, which I hadn't really considered before, but we'll get to that in a minute. But just wrapping up the Tottenham stuff, Champions League on Wednesday against Monaco at Wembley. I think it would have been cool if we could have played the last season at White Hart Lane, if we could have done the Champions League there. It is obviously awesome that we get to do it at Wembley, and as I mentioned, sold it out, which is incredible, and I think it'll be very fun for the players to play at such massive venue in Europe. But I just think, you know, as a sending off gift, it would have been amazing to have them with White Hart Lane. Eric Dyer actually echoed those sentiments earlier this week. But amazing nonetheless, and can't wait till Wednesday to see us back in Champions League action once more. All right, and now back to that top four conversation I just alluded to with Tottenham there. Guys, I want to get your take on the end of the transfer window and the start of the season. Now we're four games in, window's closed. We know what everyone's squads will be for the rest of the season. Has this changed at all who you think will be in the top four come the end of the year, or who you think might not be able to make the drop point and who may indeed go down? Richard, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think the bottom six is particularly interesting this year. I'm slightly surprised by just how bad a start Stoke have had. I know Mark Hughes traditionally starts badly. We saw that at City. I think he did it at Fulham in his 1 year there before going on to have a good year. He certainly did it at QPR. And it used to happen at Blackburn. His career was littered with slow starts. So I'm not sure if Stoke are going to remain down there, but they've not been impressive so far. They weren't very good when we went there, especially compared to how good they were last year at the Britannia against us, which is obviously only a one-game comparison, but they've looked really poor to me from what I've seen of them. They don't have that sort of the resilience that you associate with a Stoke team, and particularly at the Britannia. So I'm really fascinated by them because they're at a point where, you know, nothing's decided in the first 5-6 games, but momentum counts for a lot. And if you don't get it going quickly, you can find yourself struggling for a long time. It sets up a very difficult season. So I'm just intrigued by them. Southampton as well. I would be lying if I said I knew a lot about their manager. But they have a history of making very good managerial appointments. And they sort of tend to settle in quickly. And again, it hasn't really happened this time. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do stay down there a little bit. But it's also, you know, it's sort of a hunch at this stage. But again, momentum is massively going against them. And obviously the other team that you just threw in there, West Ham, I don't particularly expect to stay down there because Payet is good enough to think that they will... He's a good enough player to inspire them and lift them beyond the sort of malaise of a relegation battle with a player of that skill and trickery. Who gets, you know, gets the fans behind and everything like that. You think there's enough there to lift them well ahead. But again, they had a great start last year, which carried them a lot because they did have a bit of a dip mid-season, and it wasn't huge, but they did have a dip, and that good start was a cushion for them to know that they could sort of afford to ride out a 4-5 game bad spell. And now they haven't got that cushion this year because they've had such a bad start. The result against Watford this weekend was criminal, to throw away 2-0 lead. And teams at new stadiums, and again, another thing that we experienced at City to a large extent, teams at new stadiums do often tend to struggle. And there's a bit of bad press around what's happening there at the moment with fan trouble occurring far too regularly at the stadium. And I wonder how much stuff like that, when you're already in a bad run, how much stuff like that begins to seep into the squad and the constant negativity, whether it does permeate and make the mood even worse in a squad. I think Burnley have got a season-long struggle. I've not been overly impressed with Swansea. So they're the kind of teams I expect to be down there. Stoke and Sunderland are very much watch this space. Sorry, not Sunderland, because I think Sunderland will be in a battle. Stoke and Southampton are watch this space. As for the top four, I don't see it much differently to how I saw it at the start of the season. I think City, I'm very confident about. I think they will be in the top four. I think we'll probably win the league. Chelsea have been, I think, quite impressive. They did well to, even though they weren't great today, and they shouldn't have dropped points at Swansea, they did do well to come back from behind, having made two mistakes to throw away a lead. So the mentality's there and the fight's there that wasn't there for large parts of last year, and they've improved massively. I think United are better, but I'm less convinced after this weekend that they're on for a season-long title challenge. And then that makes the fourth spot as interesting as it looked in the summer. I'm intrigued to watch Everton because I think they've had a really good start and Koeman's a very good manager. I'm not convinced that they've spent money as well as we expected, given the money that they got for Stones.
and the promise of having a rich owner and what he was going to be willing to spend. I'm not sure they really did what I expected them to do in the window, but keeping Lukaku was huge for them, and they've got a good squad. So I think they will, in their the little ebbs and flows that they seem to have every year, I think they'll push quite high. I still think it'll be the year that Arsenal drop out of the top four. I've thought that for some time. And as for who replaces them, I'm just not sure whether Tottenham hold on to a top four spot or whether Liverpool nick in there, because I think Jurgen Klopp has got so much going for him, and they look pretty impressive from what I saw this weekend. The defence will be a sticking point for them, but last time they had when they finished second, they had a terrible defensive record in 2014, and it didn't stop them finishing the top four easily. So I wouldn't be surprised if the top four is City, Chelsea, United, Liverpool.
Yeah, fair enough. Dan, what do you think of Arsenal's chances? Are you feeling better or worse based on the starts of others?
I always think we'll make top four. That's not true. I thought we'll make top four essentially every year since we signed Ozil. I think we're fine for top four. I think from the top of the table, the only thing that's changed is City have become more overwhelming favorites for me than they already were. It was more like, you know, like, say these are random numbers, but say like 40% chance of City will win the league than 60 everyone else. I think more, now it's kind of switched. More like I think City will more likely than not win the league with, I think United are probably the second best team. I don't know. Then maybe Chelsea and Arsenal finish third and fourth, not sure which way. That sounds like a perfectly possible thing to happen. Bottom of the table is more interesting. I don't think Hull or Burnley have done anything to help themselves since, like, signing players-wise since we last talked about it. I think they'll still go down. Even if Hull have gotten a few good results early on, their performance has still been that great. I think it'll catch up to them. They'll go down. Same with Burnley. Haven't been great. Not that I was expecting them to be. I think they'll go down. Then for the other teams, Swansea, I begrudgingly put in my last relegated spot for at the beginning of the season. And even if I like best on signing, I don't think they've really done anything to make me not be worried about them. Bournemouth, I'm also slightly worried about. I think they'll be fine, but I wasn't a huge fan of the summer. I know Jack Wilshere on loan. I'm the Arsenal fan. I should be loving that, but I don't know. I don't know how it'll do. I really don't. Don't hate the Jordan Ibe signing for them. I think they could have done more with the resources they had, or at least the money they spent. They could have done more with it. Swansea haven't really done anything to convince me otherwise that they won't be in trouble this season. I do like the best on signing, but really I don't think they had a great summer. I think they're one of the few teams in the Premier League that didn't get better and may have got worse. Bournemouth, I didn't love their summer. I know Jack Wilshere, but I don't know if he's actually going to work out. I hated the Jordan Ibe signing. I think they could have done more with the money they spent. Watford was another team that was being thrown around there. I think they'll be all right. Their manager, whose name I'm struggling to pronounce, hasn't had a great start, but I think they've got enough talent to make it. Then West Brom, if Pulis wasn't their manager, I definitely think they'd be in trouble, but he is, so, you know, that's always weird. I really don't know who's going to be that last slot, but there are definitely some teams that I like that are worrying me. Palace is one team that did worry me a bit, but they signed Benteke, and I'm not worried about them at all. I think he should make them be, I think they should be totally fine.
Yeah, Jay, he mentioned you there. It was not a fun start to the season for Palace. Were you ever worried you'd be in that area?
I think there's more a worry that the form of last season kind of carried on to the start of this season. A lot of people think that the summer is a clean slate, and while that's true to a certain respect, I always said that the start of this season was critical for Pardew in terms of him keeping his job. And it didn't start great on opening day against West Brom, even though it was a narrow defeat. But the manner of the defeat, you could kind of see it coming. In a way, you know, we played certain points in the game, but the longer it went on without scoring, we just knew that West Brom would get a goal from a set piece, and that proved to be the case. Very similar to the second game against Tottenham, very same scenario, lost the game due to a set piece when Tottenham were a little bit off colour, but we kind of matched them in different areas. And looking back now, it doesn't look that bad a defeat, to be quite honest with you. But yeah, I think the win yesterday and getting that late goal, as I mentioned earlier, against Bournemouth in that game before was huge for us and gave us something to build on. And we obviously built on that yesterday. And we're hoping we can take it in. And I think Dan's right there. And a sign of Benteke gives us a real opportunity to push on up the table and challenge for, if not a mid-table slot, then maybe a top 10 slot, which is, we finished 10th a couple of seasons ago. There's no harm in trying to look to achieve something similar. In terms of the other clubs, I'm very surprised at Stoke's situation at the moment. I think Mark Hughes probably has to be a little bit careful at the moment, particularly with his job. But, they've allowed him to make some decent signings. Well, what looked to be decent signings, but he's got to get them to gel and gel quickly and send him at the bottom of the table. I mean, we actually face Stoke City next weekend, next Sunday, which I don't know how it's a live game on TV, not putting down my own team, but it's an odd choice. But a team like that who have just been beaten like they have been beaten are a dangerous team to face, whether they've got 1 point or not at the bottom of the table. I keep saying this after yesterday that, our home form isn't great. We struggle to break teams down at home. So that will be a tough game. Stoke will want to get a win and they will likely see us as, as a chance of getting some points. Looking around them, Southampton are a big surprise, being down, as you guys already mentioned. West Ham as well. Yeah, the West Ham one's interesting, isn't it? I mean, they look to be, flying yesterday. Two goals up in relatively quick time. Pay it back, playing for them. And they were, they were sailing through two or three points. And then Watford got involved. And it just kind of, they kind of self-combusted. And, whether the stadium situation is going to hinder them, I don't know. There's a lot to be said for moving from one stadium to another in terms of atmosphere. And, West Ham was a pitch that was quite close. Was a ground that's quite close to the pitch. The fans were quite close to the players. So it's a huge difference there in atmosphere as well. Leicester, a lot of people have said that Leicester won't win a title again. I think most people will agree with that, what with their Champions League aspirations. But I think the biggest thing for them, as many people already said, is the loss of Kante. It was so notable yesterday seeing how different they are without him. That kind of player to do what he did. He did it quietly. Like I mentioned, James McArthur for us is massive for us. Kante, even more so for Leicester, was a massive piece of them winning a title last year. So what with Champions League as well, a big defeat yesterday against Liverpool, it's going to be a very different season for them. It's going to be interesting to see how they cope with that. I can't see them finishing challenging in the top six. I really can't, but maybe they're going to prove it wrong. On the flip side, on the other side of the table, I can't see Hull staying up towards that top of the table. They've started, very well with limited resources, but I think they will end up being around a relegation zone. For me, Everton, I think, might be a surprise. I think it'd be interesting to see how they do tomorrow against Sunderland, which is a tricky game in itself, but it should be one that they would win. But I think Koeman is a shrewd appointment. They did very well at Southampton. Yeah, they had a good basis there, I have to say, but he's coming to Everton and kind of rejuvenated them a little bit and made a couple of decent signs. Lukaku staying, that's massive for them. That's kind of like a new sign. If they'd lost Lukaku, trying to find that striker to score that, score those goals for them is gold dust, as every team is finding out in the Premier League. So I think the big thing is, though, I could see Everton challenging the top six teams. I mean, the top six teams are there at the moment. They're the ones that we expect, or everyone expects, to be there or thereabouts, and I don't see that changing too much. But for me, I can see Everton being one that might cause a few upsets in there.
Yeah, I think you've all made a lot of good points. I think West Ham are the weird one that's down there right now, because I feel like a lot of people have forgotten that, yes, they already crashed out of the Europa League, which is obviously very disappointing for them. But also it means that they're going to have that run of games again where everybody else is playing in other competitions and they're going to have a free week to prepare. And I think that also helped them last season, especially compared to some of the bigger clubs that were in Europe at the time. So I do think they'll boost themselves out. I think Stoke is the craziest one. I talked a little bit about this on a radio show this morning. But the fact that Stoke are not only in last, but also have already conceded 10 goals is so crazy. And I know that most people know that Stoke are no longer the defending hoofball team they were of years gone by. But to see that, it's just absolutely incredible. I thought Bruno Martinsindi was a very good signing. He was okay as you can be as part of a defense that concedes 4 goals. I thought the Boney signing was a good one. I know that they don't have Butland or Shaqiri and that they didn't play Bojan, but this Stoke side is very talented, and the fact that they're able to get so little out of it, regardless of injuries, I think has to be a very, very big concern for them. I also went publicly and said that I thought that if you have Leroy Thayer as a player that you have to count on every week, you're going to be in trouble, and that was roughly 30 minutes before that game where he ends up scoring what at the time was the go-ahead goal against Chelsea. I do not think that Swansea adequately replaced IU or Williams, and I'd be very surprised if you could find a Swansea fan that think they did enough to replace those two. Borja was a good signing, but he's hurt. Llorente is probably a couple years too late in joining the Premier League to really have like a very marked, significant impact. So I'm worried about them as well. On the other hand, I'm not nearly as worried for Hull as you guys are. Maybe not worried. I just don't think that they're going to be in that much trouble. I think Marcus Henriksen was a phenomenal, if not underrated, if not underreported signing, because it happened after the deadline was closed that it was announced. I think bringing in Ryan Mason has value. I'm not saying he should be starting every match. You know, they do have Livermore and Huddleston there already, so they could go with three Spurs midfielders, but that's not why I think they're going to be okay. I think Abel Hernandez is a phenomenal talent still, even though he has been in the Premier League once, dropped out, and now he's back. I think he's fine. I thought the Diomaerts and Mbakani signing was a very smart second one. I still contend that if Norwich had started Mbakani over Cameron Jerome every match last season, they could have stayed up. But they just refused to. They kept doing that foolishness, swapping around Redmond and Brady and there was another one. I forget who it was. There was a central midfielder that they were pushing all the way around all the time. But anyway, I don't need to, it was Johnny Howson. Yeah, it sure was. we don't need to talk this much about Norwich. I'm just saying, I don't think Hull are going to be in as bad a spot as everybody thinks they are. Jakubowicz was never meant to be their number one. They brought in another keeper. Their main keeper, McGregor, is supposed to be back sometime soon anyway. They're going to get Michael Dawson back at some point, which some people might laugh at, but he does improve that defense. Him next to Curtis Davies, who I think has impressed a lot this season. I just don't see them fading away the way that a lot of people do, but you know, only time will tell. The problem with me backing Hull like that is now I have to pick another team to go down. Not really sure who would be in that mix. I do not think any of these teams that are down there right now will end there. I think Swansea would be the closest, even with what happened today. But as was mentioned, with players being good enough, like Benteke being good enough to lift Palace out of that entire conversation, I think Sigurdsson has that kind of ability as long as he's at a smaller club and he can be in control of the ball all the time. So we'll see how that works out for them. But I do think the chase at the bottom will be very interesting. The one at the top, I agree, Jay. I think the top six right now is probably the top six come the end of the year, but that could always change. From the Tottenham side, the reason why I think I'm more optimistic about us finishing top four right now is, A, we got points from three matches where we didn't play well, which was something that we kind of struggled in at times last season. And if Heung-min Son, I'm not going to say plays like yesterday, because that was a phenomenal match from him, and you don't expect that every match. But if Lamela continues to develop the way he has, and if Heung-min Son plays like the player, not improved from, if he plays like exactly the player he was at Bayer Leverkusen, we are in a very strong position. And I know some Spurs fans were saying that it didn't matter if we had a bad window because we have so much young talent that them developing would be the proverbial like a new signing situation. But genuinely, if Son and Lamela can step up this season, we could be in for a very fun one again. All right, now we're going to head into player watch, which is a good time to do that as I was just upping two of our own. What players impressed and disappointed for you, Richard?
Well, most impressive, I touched on them before, Silva and De Bruyne, who were, and just both of them were sensational. I thought David Silva was absolutely done, and it turns out he's not. When I say done, I mean never returning to his best. I didn't think he was suddenly about to become a terrible player or anything like that, but he struggled all last season to get anywhere close to his best. He's had a permanent ankle injury that doesn't get spoken about enough, really, for how often he plays. He's had an ankle injury since way before he joined City. It's permanently weak, and it seemed to catch up with him a little bit last year. He played far too many games with that condition. And, you know, he's had 6 years of doing that since he's been at City, with international tournaments every couple of years on top of it, where he's usually a mainstay in the Spain team. So he plays a lot of football with a permanent injury. To see him reinvigorated under Guardiola is wonderful for us, because he's, quite apart from the fact that he's brilliant at what he does, he's such an entertaining player to watch. You can just keep your eye on him for minutes at a time, and he's gliding across the pitch. It's fantastic. He turns the game into an art form. So it is nice to, from a personal perspective, just to see him back at that level. But yesterday was ridiculous. He was winning tackles, winning 50-50s. His work rate, and he's never been a slouch, but his work rate, just like the rest of the team, has gone through the roof. And De Bruyne has had a slowish start to the season, which was never going to last because he's too good a player for it to. But yesterday, in Aguero's absence, the way he helped run the line along with Iheanacho, and then did run the line despite the fact that he was absolutely out on his feet at the end, to the point that when we made our third substitution, I think it was Nolito that was trying to come off, or that was originally meant to be coming off, and De Bruyne was signalling at the bench that he was desperate for it to be him, because he was absolutely gone. It was superb. It was a performance full of intelligence and reading the game and reading the situation, calm in front of goal and all the rest of it. So they were the two most impressive for me. And then in terms of disappointment, the only one you can really look to is Bravo, and that feels horrible, because it was his debut and it was probably not the ideal situation for him to be thrown into. He knows that he's been compared to Joe Hart, who was much loved by City fans, and nobody really wanted him to go, even if we do accept that Guardiola sort of has to be given the remit to make the decisions that he wants to make. It's not a decision that people like or want to have to accept, really. So any little thing that Bravo does is going to be compared to, you know, would Joe Hart have made that mistake, and all that stuff. So for him to make an error in a derby, and then he looked rocky for the rest of the game after, he was making bad decisions when he was trying to take players on, or he was taking heavy touches, he would have to be the player that was disappointing. But that comes with a massive caveat of, it was his first game in a league that he's not used to the style of, you know, crosses into the box and the, perhaps the intensity of the hustle and bustle of a Premier League penalty box at set pieces. I don't think it's quite the same in La Liga that he's used to. So that is it does come with that massive caveat, but it wasn't a great start for him.
All right, and Dan, who impressed and disappointed for Arsenal?
Impressed was easy. It was Santi Cazorla. He was absolutely fantastic and had nothing to do with his penalty at the end. He essentially acted as a one-man midfield, which is important when we have Coughlin, which I'm probably being harsh on Coughlin a bit, but I'm not his biggest fan. And in possession, he really is a bit of a passenger, and Cazorla made up for it, especially in the second half. He was really, really, really good. Scored a penalty at the end, which took a lot of bottle, I guess is the term, a lot of balls. He was, because he had to wait like 3 minutes to take it, but he was absolutely fantastic in the middle of the park, dominated it for the entirety of the second half and even part of the first half. Disappointed, it's got to be Oxlade-Chamberlain, really. He didn't do anything positive. He lost the ball a lot, which I usually think is a bit harsh to criticize a player who is naturally risky to losing the ball a lot, but when you don't do anything on top of that, he really wasn't good. He hasn't been good for a while now. It's really sad, because I really like him, and he really does want to be good, and he's just not. He's really not been very good for a bit now. He really, really gave the ball away a lot, didn't add anything to the play. It's got to be him. Sorry, Ox.
Yeah, for me, it has to be Wilfried Zaha. He stole the show for Palace, and it's a big concern ahead of the game. It was a big performance for him, as I mentioned earlier. The transfer window may have stirred him up a little bit, made his eyes look elsewhere. Perhaps whether the interest from Spurs is actually true or not is another matter. But we've seen it before, haven't we, where players have had a bid from another club and the club hasn't let them go. So there was always a worry that this would be a bit of an issue for Wilf, but thankfully it wasn't. He really showed what he can do, and had a great game, as I mentioned. Gave George Friend a torrid afternoon. He really did. got an assist, got a goal. What more do you want from a winger? Contrary to what Alan Shearer says on Match of the Day in the evening of the game, but I won't go into that. Players disappointed. I think there's probably two defenders, actually, that disappointed a little bit. Joel Ward isn't living up to some of the fans' expectations at the moment. His fans do really enjoy Joel Ward, and he's one of those players that the fans don't like criticising. And he doesn't get a lot of criticism if he does put in a bad performance, which probably isn't the best thing, but he kind of had an average game yesterday. And Damien Delaney in the centre alongside Scott Dan, I think he's there at the moment because he does have a good partnership with Scott Dan. But as the season goes on, there's no doubt that James Tompkins will get in there and replace him as the season goes on. Damien Delaney's not getting any younger. He's done great service for us. But I think we need something a little bit more than hoofing the ball up from the back at times, which is sometimes that he tries to do too often, perhaps, and use that ball a little bit more. Hopefully Tompkins is that man, bit of a younger centre-back, and can do that. So whether Delaney's looking a bit under pressure or maybe, you know, injuries are catching up with him, I'm not sure. But for a lot of Palace fans, I think he's in there because he has a good partnership with Scott Dan, but that will change as the season goes on.
All right, now we're going to head into match previews, where I've called a bit of an audible on the guys because I scheduled match previews for the Premier League weekend, and then realized that three of us have Champions League matches before then, so with very little time to do research or anything. Richard, obviously Manchester City are up against Borussia Mönchengladbach. What do you see in this one?
Well, the biggest intrigue for me comes in City's team selection, and I'm loath to try and predict what it will be. But as I said earlier, there was De Bruyne and a couple of others looked very, very tired after the derby on Saturday. It was an extremely intense game. So I think this is going to be where we really start to see a test of Guardiola now. Because so far, yes, we have had a couple of midweek games in the Champions League playoff, but the Steaua Bucharest away game wasn't the most testing, largely because City were very good, but Steaua weren't the hardest opposition. And then the second leg, we'd already won the first leg 5-0, so the second leg was a easy night's work as well, with the job already done. So this, where we start to get to the midweek games, is going to be really interesting. I know that Mönchengladbach lost to Freiburg this weekend. They lost 3-1. I think they've played 2 and in the league, 1-1, lost 1. So they're not coming into it flying themselves or having had a great start. I know last year when we played them, they sort of took us by surprise a bit, because although we won the away game, it was which was the first time we played them last season, it was when they just changed manager because they'd had a terrible start to the season, and then they surprised us by playing a really sort of open, expansive game and hitting us a hell of a lot on the counter, which isn't the biggest surprise with the German team, but they were very, very good at it, and it took a last minute penalty to beat them, and they weren't weren't too far behind, although we beat them 4-2 in the home game. They were pretty good again. I'll be honest, I don't know what kind of summer they've had, so I don't know what kind of differences to expect from them. But I think they will present a challenge. In terms of our team selection, like I say, I don't particularly want to predict it. I assume, though, Iheanacho will start up front again, which I would greatly approve of. I thought he had a really good game on Saturday, got his goal, his first one of the season, which I'm sure will settle him. And then I wouldn't be surprised to see De Bruyne taken out. I think Silva will still start. I wouldn't be surprised if Navas came in, because Sterling and Nolito have played quite a bit of football between them. So I wouldn't be surprised if Navas came in for one of them. And then Leroy Sané is now fit and looked, although, you know, he wasn't pulling up trees because he was only on for about 15 minutes of the derby, he looked all right. It was a baptism of fire and he came through it. So I guess he could start. I wouldn't be surprised if he came off the bench again, though. And the back line will probably look very similar to what it did at weekend. Maybe Clichy could come in for Kolarov, who, again, has played quite a lot of football. I think we'll win because we look very impressive at the moment. Guardiola became the first City manager to win his first five competitive games, which then became 6 in the derby, and hopefully that will continue rolling over, because every game we win now is going to set a new record. So hopefully he'll be the first City manager to win his first 7 competitive games once Tuesday has been and gone.
All right, and Dan, you drew the big boys in your group in Paris Saint-Germain. You have the exact opposite group makeup as we do. You have one big club and two small ones that you get points against. We have difficult guys throughout the whole middle, but no really huge clubs that we're up against. Are you expecting much from this one?
Surprisingly, maybe not expecting much, but I'm more optimistic than I usually am against big clubs because PSG, they had a really bad summer. I really did not like their summer. They brought in Kucherovic, and they brought in Ben Arfa and Jesse Rodriguez, but they didn't replace Ibra at all. I still can't believe they didn't sign someone else. Cavani has been unconvincing throughout his whole PSG career, and they just got worse. They got worse. They did replace Blanc with Unai Emery, who I did like that appointment, but squad-wise, I thought they got worse. And then they'll have quite a few players missing. I know it's being reported Serge Aurier, Levin Kurzawa, and Maxwell will all be missing, so they'll have at least one backup, or they'll have at least one backup or fullback who's not actually a fullback, or an academy player, depends. Thiago Silva's still yet to play this season for them, and he didn't play on the weekend. I don't know about his fitness. And I know Di Maria and Cavani both missed out, although I think they should be fine by midweek. I think they had the same issue Alexis did, where they played for the South American World Cup qualifiers and just didn't get back till late. But they haven't been great in the league, and I don't expect a win because winning in Paris is an unbelievably difficult task. But I'm much more optimistic than I would normally be for this kind of game because they haven't looked great. We haven't looked great either, but I think we have more of our squad available to us, and we haven't looked so bad. They haven't looked good enough that I'm like, they're really not beatable. I think they're genuinely beatable, and I'm pretty optimistic for the group because, like you said, we have the one big team who I just said, they haven't looked great so far, and we have the two small teams that we should get enough points off to progress. So I think we can win. Don't know if we will, but we can, and I'm not overly pessimistic. Yeah.
All right, and Jay, for you coming back to the Premier League, how do you think you'll fare at the weekend? Do you think you'll continue your momentum from your win this week?
Yeah, hopefully so. I did mention that playing a team like Stoke, who are not playing very well off the back of a big defeat, are a dangerous team to play against, whether they got 1 point or a few more than that. So, especially Palace at home. We struggled at home, and we struggle against teams that will come and defend. And you know, Stoke will probably do that. We'll probably perhaps come to Palace and want to get at least a point, maybe seek to get a win. I'm not sure, but I think they'll be a little bit different team this week against us. So I'm hopeful that we can continue good form. But at Palace, like I say, we struggle to break teams down. I'm hoping that with Benteke getting his first goal for Palace yesterday will be a big thing for us and perhaps free him up a little bit to, it's only been his second game in the Premier League for us. So hopefully he will add to that on Sunday. But I'm hopeful we can get something out of the game, and we should be looking for a win. So I'm going to be positive and say that we're going to break our hoodoo at home and get a win against what looks to be a poor Stoke side.
All right, and Tottenham have Monaco. This is going to be our first match at Wembley in the Champions League, so it should be quite the event. As for the Spurs fans that point out that we abused them last year in the Europa League, I think they've kind of missed the point on kind of some of the moves that Monaco have made. I think they're a much tougher ask this year. They get Kamil Glick in from Torino, who I think a lot of clubs were looking after. They already have Fabinho, who is a player that a lot of people were looking at. Jabril Sidibe, not going to try that again. Was in the France squad.
Sidibe.
Sure. But he said did well in the France squad and is now an international there. They still have Joao Moutinho, who obviously we were in for a long time. Bernardo Silva. Falcao just came back. Whether or not he's going to be able to recapture some of his former glory, but I feel a lot less comfortable than I did before knowing that he'd be back, even with all of his struggles, which I guess all stem back from his knee injury right before the World Cup in 2014. But this is not an easy match for us. As the other guys echoed, I'm not sure how we're going to treat this 11. I would assume that Michel Vorm will actually be given the reins. I think if we had gotten a quote-unquote tougher group, it would have just been Lloris all the way through. I think Vorm did earn something from how well he played in that Premier League stint, and I wouldn't be surprised if he got a shot. We're probably going to do the wing back rotation thing, although Ben Davis would have to hold down that spot because Rose probably won't be ready till the weekend. I would expect to see Jansen start up front and not Kane. Sun, maybe Nkudu, maybe Sissoko. I would expect to see some level of rotation. I think this is going to be the first week where we see which defensive midfielders preferred in which, because with Dembele finally back with the suspension over, it'll be interesting to see. What I would assume is that he'll get a brief run out towards the end of this match against Monaco, and he'll start at the weekend. So then we need to decide now between if Wanyama or Dier are going to be in which competition. So I think that'll be a very interesting thing to watch. All in all, I would expect us to pick up the win, but I would not turn my nose up at a draw by any stretch. So hopefully we will be able to do that. I'm going to be optimistic and say 2-1, but I think it could easily be a 1-1 draw. All right, and that does it for us today. If you'd like to reach us at the podcast, we're at EPL Roundtable. Guys, why don't you tell the folks where they can find you?
Yeah, Richard, I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns. I write for Yahoo Sport about City, up to 2 blogs a week, and I am on the Blue Moon podcast, or I'm a member of the Blue Moon podcast that is out every Friday and is a dedicated Manchester City blog, which is also on Twitter at Blue Moon podcast.
Yeah, I'm Dan. I write for EPOndex.com, as I said before, and you can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. I'm Jay. I'm editor of the Eagles Beat, Palace fans. So you can get me on Twitter at the Eagles Beak. I'm also a presenter of a local community football radio show called Back of the Net, and I'm on Twitter at _back_of_the_net_.
Yeah, I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find some of my writings over at TheEaglesBeak.com and some at PlayTaga.com. Also have a fantasy roundtable show that goes up on Wednesday mornings and a championship show that we record on Sundays as well. That'll come out after this one, I believe, this week. Also, looks like I'll probably be doing the World Football Index show again this week, so go check them out as well. Probably more stuff. If there's more stuff, I'll tweet it out again, at Kevroff. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.